For February 22nd, 2016, this is episode 39 of the PHP Roundtable. Today we get a status update on the app that we discussed in episode 21 and talk about the next step to get our idea out of our heads and onto a production server. I'm your host, Sammy K. Powers. Way back in episode 21, last May, we went through the process of turning an idea for an app into actual production code. Fast forward nearly 10 months later, which is today, we finally have a very ugly and basic minimum viable product, or MVP. So today we're discussing the process of what it will look like from here. Like, where do we go from here? And we're going to take a look at like what we were originally talking about, the original spec, and what's changed, and maybe talk about some of the problems we ran into, and hopefully figure out the next step to get it in the hands of actual dancers who are going to be using the app. And just as before, the folks joining us at the roundtable basically represent a real-world startup wanting to create a new app, and the startup has hired a consultant to help them convert their ideas into code. So let's meet that professional consultant that the startup has hired to create this code, and that is Stephen McGuire, who is a builder of teams, software architect, and product designer living in Chicago, Illinois. He is currently using his powers to help email delivery suck a little bit less for the VP as the VP of technology at Earth Class Mail. Welcome back, Stephen.
Hey, thanks for having me. One small correction. It's helping mail delivery, not email delivery.
Mail delivery.
Yeah,
oh,
I made physical it. Mail.
It is interesting how my mind automatically added an email.
That's okay. That's actually what we hope happens with people who receive physical mail, is that the experience is just like email.
Nice. That's good. That's awesome. Yeah. That sounds like a really cool product.
It is.
Awesome. Well, also we have joining us Jocelyn Lopez, she's a West Coast Swing competitor who travels around the states competing at swing events and is a prolific teacher of dance in Chicago. Welcome, Jocelyn.
Hi, Sammy. Thanks for having me back again.
Yeah. Thanks for coming back. Mm-hmm. And also joining us is Dan Yamamoto, who is a passionate West Coast Swing dancer who wants to see the community grow into the mainstream and is a creative director at Wondering Westie. Welcome, Dan.
Hey guys, thanks for inviting me to join your little podcast. I'm excited to kind of hear what's happening and chime in when I can.
Absolutely. So the reason why Dan wasn't here for the first part, and we talking in the community, talking about this dancer deck idea that we're going to kind of recap here in a second. We talked about maybe doing some stuff that in collaboration, because he's doing a lot of really cool things in the community with the web. So without further ado, let's get a refresher on the domain and the problem that we were even talking about in the first place. So this app that we're building is an app that helps dancers, competitors mainly, manage their dance events coming up. And this is for specifically not just any dance, but specifically West Coast Swing. So I'm going to put Jocelyn on the spot. How many times has somebody asked you what West Coast Swing is?
Countless times.
And what do you tell them?
You know, what I tell them is the easiest way to find out what West Coast Swing is to look it up on YouTube. But I tell them it's mostly a contemporary style of swing. It's like a melting pot of a lot of different dances. And it's a really well-rounded dance, and you can dance to a bunch of different styles of music, which makes it really unique and really, really fun to do.
True that. And I love that you can dance to pretty much any style of music, and it's not like you're stuck to just dancing to a specific style, and so you can only dance it when you're going to a specific dance. You can go to like a nightclub and they're playing music and you're like, oh, let's do some West Coast. So it's a really great dance. I hope people listening kind of get inspired and check it out on their own and maybe get bit by the West Coast Swing bug. You never know. But some of the problems that we were kind of figured out in the last episode, part one, that this app would ultimately solve was remembering the early bird deadlines for these events. So they happen once a year, and sometimes you went last year and you don't think about it until the next year, and suddenly it's a week before the event and you're like, oh crap, I missed early bird, which was like a month ago. So that's one problem. Another one is managing strictly partners, and we described this in a little bit more detail in the last episode, but it's basically a competition where you coordinate with somebody else that you know, and you kind of try to coordinate colors and you match and then you dance together and compete that way, and it changes for each event, so it's kind of hard to manage that. the other problem that this is going to solve is remembering the events themselves, because sometimes we just forget, hey, there's an event this weekend, because we compete a lot. Like, a lot of us are competing like 2 or 3 times a month, so it's kind of crazy. Also, who you're rooming with. We do a lot of hotel shares together, and keeping track of that is kind of difficult. Keeping track, this was something that came up in the last episode, was keeping track of the people you don't want to room with again. Because sometimes, you know, it's a big community, and there's a lot of people that you kind of end up rooming with, and you might forget that, like, oh yeah, this person was a little shady, I didn't like rooming with them or whatever. So, but that one was not high on the priority list for this app, certainly not in the MVP. The last two things we figured out this app would solve the problems of is knowing which event is coming up for each region. So, like, if I just wanted to see all Midwest events, for example, I could do that. And then also syncing all these events to a Google Calendar, which is kind of like the most important one for myself, because I keep track of everything in Google. If it's not in Google, then it doesn't exist. So what do we have? We have an app that is built-ish. It's definitely it's ugly. So you guys checked it out, right? Or do you guys have it? I sent it to you like 5 seconds before going on. So what are your all's first impressions of the ugliest app you've ever seen?
Well, first of all, I don't think it's the ugliest app I've ever seen. I've been in client services for about 10 years, so.
I think I have to agree with that. I think it looks all right.
Yeah. It's all Bootstrap, all Twitter Bootstrap stuff. So if you are listening and you actually want to check it out, it's at dancerdeck.com. And it's very ugly right at the moment. It doesn't do anything much. It's just got fake data in there at the moment. I'm using Faker to fill it in and seed the database. But here's a quick rundown of everything the app is doing. It's built on Laravel 5.2, and it's running Vue.js on the front end. And like I said, it's at dancerdeck.com. The TLS is provided by Let's Encrypt. So if you've never had Let's Encrypt, if you've ever tried to install SSLs, it can be a real pain in the butt. It costs money, but there's an open source encryption certificate authority out there called Let's Encrypt, and it's amazing to just install it with just a couple commands in the command prompt, and you suddenly got an SSL running. And there's a great article by, I didn't put it in the show notes, but it's Teresa, Erica Heide. Erica Heide, I believe, at DigitalOcean, and she wrote a blog about setting up Let's Encrypt, so definitely try to check that out.
With automatic renewals?
Yes. She has a great SSH script that goes that you can download and install and set up a cron job that automatically renews your certificate once every 30 days, I believe.
Yeah, because they expire after 90, I think.
Yes. Yeah. Don't let them expire. But you don't have to worry about it ever again, because it automatically updates itself, and it's just like one of those things you just forget and it never breaks. So that's awesome. Some of the features that it has, by the way, the API for the backend is completely done, pretty much. Like, all the features for iteration one are pretty much in that API. And it's just really focusing on the front end stuff. So as far as front end stuff, the homepage has upcoming events, and it lists the events with early bird pricing ending soon. It also has a nice little quick search for events. So you start typing an event and it's like, does autocomplete, kind of like when you search for a friend on Facebook in the header. And then you can also search for events within a certain radius of a city, which is kind of handy. And the event landing page has event info and a map and a live countdown, also lists the hotels. So you got the main hotel and overflow hotels and nearby events. And the user login is actually really close to being done. So one thing that kind of changed since the last time we talked is we're skipping over the subscribe by email phase a little bit, because we talked about like skipping over the user login, because like, you know, for MVP, you're kind of looking for like the skinniest little app you can get. But like, user login was so easy, and it kind of works out of the box so well with Laravel. It was sort of like, well, we're just going to have this working. So we're going to skip over the subscribe by email phase. But I wanted to summarize quickly some of the technical problems that I ran into, why it took 10 months to get here to iteration one-ish, almost one. And that is, first of all, time. It just, you know, you try to do a project and then time, there's a limited amount of it, and you choose to put some of it somewhere and some of it other places. And I just haven't put a lot of time into it until recently. So. But the number one technical thing that held me back was deciding to use a graph database for the backend. Now, graph databases are awesome, and we're going to talk about them in the next episode, and we're going to talk about why they're awesome, and they can be really good especially with a project like this, with highly relational data. But I was having a lot of trouble getting an ORM to work with it, and I couldn't find a good one. Although, wait, Stephen, were you about to say something?
No, I was just saying,
We actually talked about that in the ORM discussion episode about how I was having trouble working with it, getting an ORM to work with the graph database, and that was because of this project. I also felt like I was reinventing the wheel a little bit with the ORM and seeding the database. I was doing well. I had Neo4j running. I was interfacing with it, throwing tons of data in it, and it was working great. Except for I was having a lot of time just getting it to be kind of like bridging the gap from sort of like this is a cool idea to like this is a great implementation for this actual app. So that was a bit of a deal stopper. In fact, the project sat completely unattended from August 19th, which was the last commit on the Neo4j project, and until I rage started back. Usually you hear people rage quitting. I rage started back on January 15th, and that was when I tried to book a hotel for Madjan this year, which, as Dan and Jocelyn know, is one of the bigger events on the East Coast. And the hotels sell out insanely far in advance, and it was 3 months out from Mad Jam, and the hotel was completely sold out, and I was just mad. I was sitting there with Tim He, who's a fellow dancer and he's a programmer, and we were just kind of nerding out, and we're like, oh man, I don't have a hotel, I got to start this dancer deck thing. So I went back to the code base. I looked at it, I was like, this Neo4j thing is just it's slowing me down so much, I'm just gonna scrap it and just go use the tools that I know how to use. So I started from scratch using the tools that I knew how to use and completely finished the API in 10 days in my spare time. So that's kind of like when you're trying to get a project out, something I've learned is sometimes you got the ideal thing that you want to do, and then you got the reality of getting it done. So I had to find a happy medium with that one. So starting with this new restarting from scratch, this is how I started. This is the process. I started with documentation, believe it or not. I just opened a readme.md file and just started writing. I was writing the API documentation, just like, what are my endpoints? What do I need? From there, I started thinking, okay, what's my database structure? So I started writing database migration scripts. And then I added seeders. I was like, what kind of data? How is this data going to relate to each other? And I was realizing, oh, I need to change this on the model, or I need to change this endpoint. So it was going back and forth. So it was really kind of document-driven developing, which is something that we've kind of talked about in the past, in a couple episodes in the past. So I got all my endpoints rocking for basic CRUD operations, for everything that the iteration one would need. And then I just started developing all the front end with Vue.js. And that's kind of where we're at right now. But I do have a few user interface questions that I gotta kick this one off to Dan, because Dan is he's such a great designer, and he does some really, really great designs within the West Coast Swing community and on the web. So Dan, how are you not like me, where I look at something and I just get locked up and frozen by like just being paralyzed by not being able to take an idea to a nice interface that people could use? Like, what's your secret?
I don't know if I have a secret. I think if I had a secret, then my job would be much easier. I think that a lot of it has to do almost with what you were just talking about. Start a plan and get working on that plan and, you know, move forward. Projects that are my personal projects tend to take forever and drag on for 10 months until I decide that it's a project that I need to get going. And in 3 hours, I move way more than I did in 10 months. You know,
exactly. So
on my personal projects, I find that I try to give myself the time, and I try to learn maybe new ways to do things, so that for my clients' projects, I have new tools. And sometimes the best tool is the tool of just getting it done. I think that that's actually more of a secret than some secret sauce that gets a project done.
Yeah. Well, it's good when you finally get over that hump, and then you get something out. And I haven't figured out how to do that quite for design things yet or user interface stuff, but I'll get there eventually. Actually, I wanted to, before we start thinking of next steps, I do want to quickly talk about some of the new technologies that I implemented in this app that I hadn't implemented on other apps before. So my new technology token, I think we talked about like technology token or innovation token. It's this concept I heard on, I think it was that podcast, the podcast with Bo and Dave, and they were talking about, like, when you start a project, you get this innovation token that you can use to, like, you get one to like start with new technology. You don't want to, like, have 15 innovation tokens and then, like, get frozen by, like, trying to learn all these new technologies. But I mean this is a learning experience. So my innovation token was Neo4j graph database, but it was slowing me down so much I had to kind of bail on that innovation token. So my innovation tokens actually
you got a refund. I got a refund.
I did. Yeah. I've never done a single page app before, like full on, like legitimate single page app. So I figured I would tackle that with this, using Vue.js. And Vue.js is amazing. It's like all the cool things about React.js that I love so much, but are 10 times easier on the developer experience side. And then one of the problems that I'm going to have to probably have a Vue.js a podcast pretty soon to talk about some of the problems that I'm having with Vue.js and how to overcome some of those. So I think I might put that on the list.
Yeah.
So also JSON web tokens. I'm familiar with these on the Facebook side of things because they have something called a signed request, which looks a lot like a JSON web token. But basically, it's a Base64 encoded payload of data, and it has a signature on it that you can verify to make sure that the data is legit and coming from a source that is trusted. And that's something that you can use to authenticate a user. Like, once they authenticate, you send a JSON web token, and every time they make a request, you can send the token back. And that's really cool because you don't actually have to store the token on the server side. It's like, it's kind of blowing my mind a little bit. I was like, well, where do I put this in the database? But you don't have to. So it's kind of cool. So we'll talk about that probably in a later podcast. And the last two things that I've been working on are ES6. I've been trying to learn all the new syntax for JavaScript in ES6. There's a lot of really cool things in there. PHP Storm is my IDE that I use, and there's a couple of syntax highlighting issues, and it's showing, like, hey, this is an error, but it's just like some of this ES6 stuff is throwing off the syntax highlighter a little bit. So that's one issue I've been running into with ES6. But I'm also using local storage, which I've never used in JavaScript, using JavaScript to store local storage information on a user's browser. And that's to store the JSON web token for the user. So lots of cool little things that I've never quite done on the web before. So I am learning stuff on this. And so that's pretty much brings us up to where we are right now. And I know I've been talking for a long time, so, and I don't like that. I need to have other people talk. So maybe I need to kick this one off to Steven and be like, you're the official consultant.
Yep.
What do we do now?
Well, I have questions for you on the technical front, but before we get into those, I think that the goal here is to try and kind of review what our priorities were last time, and then synthesize the new information that you've got, that you've learned over the last 10 months, which is basically the last month because you've actually been working for that long, and then try and get the priorities kind of readjusted. So I'd say that's like the big goal of this sort of conversation, but this isn't really like a clean cut and dry, change management meeting. So I'd love to talk to you a little bit about some more. I got some questions for you about your, I was counting, you have 4 innovation tokens that you used. So
nice.
But I think that's kind of the big goal. But along the way, I would like to talk to you a little bit about the tech that's behind it. But I don't want Jocelyn and Dan to be bored.
Right. You know. Totally. Cool. So you're saying we should go through the prioritization list that we created last time.
Yeah, I think by the end of this podcast, you should have a revised priority list that is reflective of what you know today and has the general input from the people that you've brought together today to talk about the problem. So we don't have to like plow through it right now, but over the next, 35 minutes or what have you, I'd say at the end, you want to make sure that you've got the list is up to date and has all the new information as close as you possibly can.
Cool.
So we can start by reviewing it if you like right now. And then
absolutely.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at the list right now. The first one on the list was event curation, which included the event time, date, location, hotels, airports, and region. And that, for the most part, is done. I don't have airports in there right now. But as far as event curation, I should say the back end is done. The APIs are set up to completely handle all this stuff. But the front end, to actually have a user go in there and enter these details, isn't done.
Okay. So it's kind of partially done. It might have forked, you know.
Yeah.
You might have the experience of you know, browsing. I think the second one was the event discovery.
Yes.
The search and filter. So if the UI is kind of a bit spotty on that side, but the data is actually there in the back end, you know, I might say that if you can actually store the time, the date, location, hotels, airports, and regions for each of those events, I would call event curation done if you have a tool that lets you kind of put that stuff in there, because it sounds like the problem is still number two, which was event discovery, search, and
right.
filter.
Well, and that one's actually more complete than event curation, believe it or not. The okay. event discovery, the auto complete search at the top for a quick search on the events is done.
Okay.
And the search by radius is done. So.
Well, let's put a little tick mark next to event curation and maybe come back to that. But it seems like event discovery is kind of done.
Yeah, event discovery is done.
Awesome. Yeah. And then you had next event calendar integration.
Yes.
And it said all in specific, but I don't know what that...
I don't either. We didn't make those notes specific enough.
Yeah. Okay. But can you export the event and import it into Google Calendar or something like that?
No.
Okay. So that one's still...
That one's a big one for me. So I'm glad it's number three, because I definitely am going to be knocking that one out soon.
Participant accounts. Yes. That was number four. You've actually nailed that one, it sounds like.
Yes. On the back end, the front end still needs to be completed, but it's really close. It just needs a registration form, and I need to figure out how to properly handle my JSON web tokens. But yeah, a user can technically log in right now. It just doesn't really do anything.
So that one might be like a quick win to kind of finish.
Yeah.
Finish up and wrap up.
Quick and done.
Cool. Event subscription.
Now, this is one I haven't – this one, I maybe we're going to have to throw this one out to Joss and Dan, too, to figure out how we want to approach event subscription and what it actually does. So the idea is that you have an event that you want to watch, and that's the word I'm using. I don't know if that's right, really the right word to use. But I want to be notified when there's an early bird pricing ending. I need to be notified, like, in advance that, hey, I need to buy airfare for this or whatever. So – I'm thinking something like the GitHub user interface, where you're on a repo and you got the opportunity. You have like a button up here to watch the repo, and you have another one that you can star it to like favorite it, but you don't actually get notifications for the repo. So if you watch a repo, then any new issues that come in or anything, any pull requests, you'll get an email notification saying, "Hey, this is there's some activity here." So I'm thinking of doing the same thing with Dancer Deck. You can just watch an event and then have a little drop down that says, do you want to watch just this event, or do you want to watch all the events, like future events for Mad Jam, for example? Like, do you just want to subscribe to Mad Jam 2016, or do you want to subscribe to Mad Jam, all the things? what are your thoughts on that, Dan and Joss? Like, how do you conceptualize in your head, like, how you would like subscribe to an event or watch it or whatever? What words do you guys think of?
I think that maybe just using the Facebook terminology of now interested in an event, and that interested would get you information on, you know, any of your notifications. And then maybe there's a like type situation where it's a little bit less than interested, but it's just letting you know, your system know that you're keeping tabs on that event. And then maybe there's a third one that's actually attending or going or whatever that might be.
I like that.
I also, yeah. I like that you're going to have potentially different levels to that. So as far as subscribing, you said that you may get options on subscribe to all the Mad Jams. So potentially maybe you could run it where it also picks up region or event director or some other type of category. Mm.
That's a cool feature. Subscribe by region or subscribe by event director.
Or state, you know, something like that.
Yeah. Just writing this one down. Subscribe by event.
Yeah. And this might be a question for you guys that are consumers of this subscription. For the most part, like event notifications, they usually happen when something happens in the database or in the application. So what types of changes to an event or to a dance competition would you care about hearing about? Is it like just when it's created, or if the venue changes, or what do you think those types of changes are?
So like specifically for Mad Jam, which is coming up in about 2 weeks, they changed the location of the hotel. So that was a really big deal. So we had to make sure that we bought the right tickets because for the plane to the new location, because last year we bought tickets to a different airport. So this year it changed. Cool. And then also like what Sammy was saying, how there was changes to the blocks on the hotel. Like sometimes rooms run out and we have to buy a room or get a room in the overflow hotel. And then just changes whenever more rooms are available. I would say things like that, maybe schedule changes as well, and pricing. So
cool. Mm-hmm.
Schedule changes. That's a big one for iteration 15, I think. but tracking individual schedules in this thing would be amazing. And I've even gone as far as thinking, I was talking about with my dance partner, Heather, and we were saying it would be so cool if we could have a sponsor for an event and they could just sit there in the ballroom and they could just tick off where they are in the schedule, because events are just like, they're always, I mean, so many of them are just so behind schedule, and you're just like, you have to like dress up and get ready for your competition, but then you're like sitting in the ballroom for like 2 hours because they're 2 hours behind schedule, and it's like, man, I could have just been relaxing and resting and getting ready for my competition. So like having a live updated schedule, that's kind of in the books that could be, you know, in the system soon.
Totally. Yeah. Well, I maybe have a quick win suggestion for you, Sammy, because yes. you're using the wonderful powers of Laravel. in your event itself, if you have sort of like a body of text that is the description for the event that maybe has like a poor man's schedule, like a bulleted list, mm-hmm. You could have like a little check mark, little box that you tick that says this includes a schedule change, and then that way you could fire a Laravel event that has like an event listener that's like sort of saying, hey, okay, now we want to alert people of this. So you may be painting yourself in a corner by making this the solution be so specific and embellished, when all you're trying to do is capture a moment in time where the application has changed and it's aware of a particular context, right? So it says, wow, this update was for schedule change, you know?
Absolutely. That's a good idea. So that even if it hotel, like an overflow hotel gets added, for example, that could
exactly.
be.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. So the body of text that has all the information could still be one attribute or one column. Right. But as the moderator of the event, you could mortgage a bit of that work onto the moderator or the administrator. And so they can just say, okay, great. Like this is the description has changed. But here's maybe a list of like five or six contexts in which it has changed, and check off the ones that have. And then when they hit save, you could fire these Laravel events that acknowledge those particular events and then send off an email or a tweet or whatever else you want to the people, without building all that extra infrastructure.
I like it.
I have a question. Are these notifications something that can be going on during an event?
Yes. The idea behind – the reason I started API first is actually not because I wanted to build a single-page app. That actually came afterwards after I had completed the API. I'm like, oh, I guess I need to make an SPA. But it is because I wanted to eventually turn this into a native mobile app, and that it would just be having this Laravel app running as its backend. So I'm envisioning push notifications during the event with your cell phone. You get like, hey, they just started intermediate Jack and Jill, or hey, they're lining all advanced Jack and Jill competitors need to line up, or whatever, you know.
Yeah. And you could use Twilio today and do SMS. You know, now that you've got user registrations, you could have people actually say, yeah, it's okay for me to give Sammy my cell phone number because I know that his website is going to send me cool text messages about updates, you know?
Yes.
Yeah, I think as an attendee, I would want stuff like comp registration notifications, maybe comp check-in notifications, or if comps are going to be running late, I would like to know some information on that. And then for maybe possibly before the event, I'm not sure if you'll be tracking attendance, but maybe when you hit certain markers, like, oh, this event has broken the 100 attendee or 250 attendee, because that I feel like would probably get more people excited to purchase passes or attend an event.
Yeah, that's a cool idea. Push notification for number of attendee, like attendee milestones or something.
Yeah.
And what maybe we can add in like location milestones. I'm not really sure if that's something, but, you know, more for the promotional side.
I'm not familiar with, when you say comps, you mean what do you mean by that? When you say comp registration and comp check-in?
So basically the way a competition works is there's deadlines for when you can register. So say at noon, that's the last time that you can register for your Jack and Jill's. So you have to make sure that you register before that time on that day.
I see.
Check-in is when everybody lines up, gets ready to get onto the dance floor and compete. So everybody checks in with the floor mom, and she makes sure that everyone's there and is ready to go.
Gotcha. That helps. Thank you.
One problem I can foresee happening with the notifications is that you go to an event and you just, your phone blows up with push notifications, because if we're tracking all these little details, I mean, they run a ton of competitions. It's not just like one or two. It's like a billion, especially at the country comps. So I'm thinking there would have to be some sort of layer of fine-grained notification, like subscribing and unsubscribing. Like basically, like if you watch an event, you get the basic push notifications, but then you can go in and like say, like, I specifically want these notifications too, like kind of an opt-in kind of thing for certain notifications. Plus I think it costs money to send push notifications, right?
Yeah, there's usually a cost there. There's some ways to solve that problem are like, you can have people set a preference for how frequently they would like to be notified. And then you can kind of roll up, right? So if Jocelyn says, hey, I'm on a pretty good schedule here. I just want to be updated maybe every 10 minutes if something happens, then the system can kind of like build a list of things that she might care about, but it only actually sends her a message once every 10 minutes that has them all kind of rolled up. That, you know, trying to aggregate messages for people is one way to help, you know, help them not get inundated, or you could let people set hours. Right. So I can only receive these messages during these particular hours of the day. And, you know, there's some ways to get around that.
I like that solution. And, you know, and before we even get to the push notification phase, really, if there was even just a page people could visit, that would they could just get the updated schedule. You know, like if I know I'm getting ready to do, if Jack and Jill's are within like 3 hours, I can just go to this page and keep refreshing and saying, like, where are they at right now? That's one of the beautiful things about going to an event that actually streams the event to your room, your hotel room. So you can sit there and you'll know exactly where they are in the schedule. But that there's only a couple events that do that. So, and when you go to them, you're like, oh, yeah, just sit in bed and wait for my competition instead of preparing for it. I feel like if we were to just kind of say, okay, what's the next step for as far as just getting like an iteration out to where I can send a couple of private beta testers to with real data and be like, see, here's what we got. Like, if all we wanted to do was add the events, like real events, and get people actually adding and curating the event content, I feel like that's kind of like number one.
Yep. That seemed to be the priority last time. And because there's still a question of what's missing, that one might likely stay on the top of your list, because it kind of seems like you have to have the data in there to even start allowing people to care about what the data is, you know?
Yeah. And I honestly, like, I feel like if we even just get event curation done, like getting a nicer than what's their user interface set up to where people can browse the events and create and have certain curators who can manage that data, then that's like kind of a private beta that I'd be very happy with. And I could even go public with that. And I think even subscriptions, like, are watching events, so like getting subscription or getting notifications could be iteration too. What do you guys think?
I think it's a good one to have, especially if you want to start rolling in, you know, profiles and preferences for people. You might want to get the participant accounts. There's a potential quick win there. You might want to get those taken care of, with the idea that you want to sort of have this fine grain preferences attached to them. But it definitely sounds from the conversation that we just had that event subscription is filling the air right now, and that one you could spend a whole iteration on that. But I did want to remind you, Sammy, that last time there was also, which sounds like this is the same thing, but event reminder system, which is kind of the same.
Oh, yes.
You had invitations, I think. Like you wanted to invite specific people.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
For strictly partners. There's a whole section that we even mentioned yet is the whole strictly partner managing thing where you invite somebody to do a competition, like, hey, let's do strictly sometime. It's like, okay. And then make it easy for them to just see all your events that you're about to do that year and be like, I want that one. And then they're like, okay. And they click on a link and it confirms it. And then it takes it off the list for anybody else who wants to do strictly with them. So that would be baller. Cause then you could even like tie in like, oh, we're going to wear purple. Like you always forget to do that until the last second, and you're like, "Crap, I didn't bring purple," you know. So,
well, the good thing that now that you have an application that actually functions, you can start to like group these things logically together, and just you know, to the point that Dan was making earlier, I think you just give yourself like a 1 week sprint to like get some things done inside of one of these buckets, and just try to get through it as best as you possibly can, instead of trying to like, you know, blow it out or make it, you know, too much. Because I still feel like you could get a lot of value out of not having a huge data model for these events, but actually just capturing these little tiny changes, because it seems like that's what people care about. You're in the business of distributing information and not necessarily in the business of like being Wikipedia, you know, like people.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, like after the event's over, it's like it's kind of pointless to keep it around. So you want to try and get the changes to the data quickly, you know.
And I feel like the value of iteration one without notifications is just going to be to have kind of like what you said, a Wikipedia. My current Wikipedia is a giant folder of bookmarks that I have of all these dance events, and I'm like, let's see, I've got them ordered in the order that they run in the year. So it's like, it's literally just gonna be like, I'm gonna be able to quickly search Mad Jam, and it's gonna have all the details that I want to know. Like, I want to like click on the hotel, did I to register, like I want to look at the results, like I want like quick links to the results. I want quick links to the schedule. I want quick links to, like, I don't want to have to mess around with all these individual websites, like all these events websites. They just look like crap, and they're just, their navigations are all over the place. And you're like, where the hell did they put the freaking hotel? Like, where, that's the most important thing. And it's not even in the main nav. Like, it's just really frustrating. So like, if there was a consistent interface, I could just always go to like, okay, this event, this is the hotel, this is the schedule. That'd be enough for iteration one for me.
Yep.
So like you're saying, so sprint on it is what you're saying.
Sprint, start. You've got the, you know, you can't wait for the monolithic app to be done, you know.
Absolutely.
But you've got something that's here. You just kind of pick a problem that you feel confident that can be solved inside of a few days, and then just try and get it done, you know. It seems like though, I wanted to go back and ask you a question about your domain objects. So we had a big one, which was called a dance competition. Right. And it seems like there's actually like a layer of like classification above them. Like,
yep.
Mad Jam 2016 is actually a competition, but you might have like a group or like a series of events that you've.
That's exactly what I called it. A series. Yep. There, in the database model, the exact terminology is event series, and that is like Mad Jam. That is the event. And then you have event model, which is the specific event for that year. So 2016 Mad Jam, 2014. So you could actually subscribe to a whole series and then just get all the notifications all the time for all the events, or just a single event and just get it for that one event. Because like some people just go to one and off, right? Like I did Mad Jam 2016, never going to go back. Although you would never do that because Mad Jam's awesome, but once you have the option of doing both. But yeah, you're absolutely right. That was a problem that I really ran into when I was like, well, how do you subscribe to this event? And then it remembers you for next year, but because that's a new database entry, because it's got different hotels sometimes, different group rate, you know, all this stuff changes.
I think series is a good answer to that. And, you know, the reason I wanted to kind of ask you about that is that if you decide to go down this route of kind of doing the event subscription things next, is that you might want to have a polymorphic relationship between what the things people are interested in. So you might have like a user record for you to care about these things. But then you might have like, okay, well, I want to receive notifications for, and then it's just either an event model entity or it's a series model entity. Right.
Right.
But then you can manage all that through like one table. And then that's the thing that you kind of parse through every time you're looking, every time an event is fired, to see who gets sent the message.
Now, okay, so are you recommending keeping that in the same endpoint as well on the API side?
No. So I would maybe have as a resource. Is your API sort of scoped to the current logged in user?
That's interesting. You talked about that. I think Adam Wathen talked about that on the last. What's the name of his podcast? I listen to it all the time. Something S.
Now he's angry at you.
I know he's angry at me. Gosh, sorry, yeah. Adam. He's got a great podcast. I'll look it up in a minute. But like they were just talking about this app scope ID, app scope endpoints topic, and
yeah,
I do. So I'm gonna have to put a bookmark in that question because I do remember wrestling with that, and it's in my documentation. Which, by the way, I have 400 something lines in my documentation on this app for the API. So this is why you write documentation. I'm the person who wrote this, and I don't know the answer to this question.
Yeah. Well, so either way, I would treat a node like a notification subscription as a separate resource. But you might just spend some time when you think about it that way. You might spend some time thinking about how do people insert new notifications or update them if it actually is a relationship to another entity, right? I certainly wouldn't say make that be the only entry point to doing that. You might also have a person's event model that they care about. There might be like a notifications, like if you have a subscription of some sort of subscription entity that encapsulated this, there might be like a notification preference method that's on top of that as well. I'm sorry. It's very vague at the moment because
I haven't seen it. So, yeah, so here's my endpoint for series, for example. It's /users/user ID/series. And if you send a post request with the I don't have Postman open, so I don't actually know. But you basically create a subscription by sending a post request to that endpoint. And what I'm hearing from you is you could send a put request with or patch request with maybe a list of specific notifications that you want to get by subscribing to that series.
Yeah. So you want to think about it like there's one resource that you're trying to actually do business against, but there may be three or four ways to affect that. And it all depends on how you're kind of coming into it, right? So if you're within the context of a current user, then obviously you would be adding, it would be a foregone conclusion that the user was the other side of that subscription, right? So you'd just be providing the other entity that was meant to link up there. But then if you were looking at the event series itself, then you would know the ID, and then the preferences thing you'd only want to provide the user, right?
Right.
But you're still trying to build one resource. You're still trying to build one entity that may have its own resource for like indexing and putting and inserting or what have you.
Right. So I have a question on how you would design this, because I think a lot of people run into this when developing APIs, is when you have a nested resource, and for the sake of argument, we're going to assume that we don't have context-aware endpoints to where you could do like /me and it would return the logged in user. But you're like specifically explicitly saying /user/1/whatever, like the user ID slash then whatever the nested resource is. So for example, I have an endpoint /user/user ID/series/series ID. And if you do a delete request to that, it will unwatch that series. So would you have that go to /series, like send a delete request to /series/the ID of the specific index?
I think what you have right now is going to be fine, because you're basically saying for this user and this specific series, delete the relationship.
Right.
That's okay for me. That makes sense to me, because you're not actually deleting the actual series itself. If you were doing that, it would just be /series/ID and then the delete.
I think that's probably why I did it originally, because it makes more semantic sense in the API. You can just read that, yeah, this is a series for this user. But I think it does start getting a little weird when you I'm not trying to repeat the podcast, Adam's podcast, Full Stack Radio. Boom. Remembered. Ow, bud, I just banged my elbow on the table. Okay. But they were just talking about the same thing about like how deep do you get with your nested resources, like /series/ hotel slash whatever, like, yeah, like how much of that do you put in the URL? And I'm thinking that it seems kind of dirtier. The more I put in there, the dirtier it feels. And the more that it puts more of a burden it puts onto the consumer to actually use the API a little bit, you know?
Yeah. My best practice whenever I'm building it is to not go more than that, I actually only want to go one ID and then one resource, no second entity ID. But I know that you're sort of in MVP phase, and I think that what you described is close enough to working okay right now. But at some point, you would actually want to have a subscription entity that managed the relationship between the user and the event series or the competition itself, and then you would actually be performing a delete request against subscription and then that subscription ID. That would be the purest way to do it, because it is that relationship that's actually making the most that you're actually doing the work against. But then when you go to create them, you want to then provide the user ID and then the event series ID so that it knew what the relationship was. But my suggestion earlier was that you make that table be sort of a polymorphic relationship, wherein it could be for an event series, or it could be for an event, an actual competition, or it could be for another person, right? It could be, I care about this person. And then that way you're still just deleting one record of the subscription, even though the context might be all over the place.
Right. Yeah. That's something that I've got to consider and look into a little bit more, just to kind of maybe step back and look at how I've done on my relationships and see if I can, kind of rethink of them a little bit to where they make a little bit more sense, especially on the API side of things. And the reason I bring that up is because Dan and I talked at the last event that we were at about integrating this service to stuff that he's doing. And that's one of another big focus on creating a web API for him. And I know you actually do some WordPress stuff, don't you, Dan?
Yeah, I do a little bit with WordPress. A lot of the pros, their sites tend to be about the same, but I have issues with events and consistent data across all of them, their own schedules, their student schedules, the event schedules. So yeah.
And we talked about a couple of the different things that might that you might be able to gain from this endpoint. And so I wanted to kind of throw that at you and see, like, what is like your next step as far as like how do you see yourself kind of consuming this API a little bit? Like what data would you be kind of taking from this app? And maybe that could help us kind of figure out some of the next priorities as well.
And please feel free to stop me from talking when I'm doing this, but,
you haven't said anything yet.
a lot of the stuff is going to be probably user generated that benefits, the attendees for the competitions. And then there's going to be the backend stuff that's beneficial for the event directors. So right off the bat, I think that things like, pros able to put their schedule in and show what they're looking to be hired for, and maybe the services that they're looking to offer, and then the event directors are able to instantly pull up a list of, these are the people that are available on my weekend and maybe I want to try them out, you know. So that's something that I think is kind of valuable that's not really being done. From an attendee side, I'd love to see like a dance card that says, oh, these are my stats.
Yeah. Like,
this is my finals ratio. This is how many events I attended that year. You know, these are the different badges that I've won for achievements, because you get an achievement for going to more than one event a month, or I don't know. So like things like that. And I think that all that data, I just want that data collected and then be able to use, you know, if the pro wants to show off their badges on their website, then it would take the data from your app, and I'd just be able to spit it out on their website. So things, you know, things that are consistently used, where it would save the pros a ton of time and money on their websites that are being made currently. And I think it would make it a lot easier and consistent data.
I love it.
Like bios.
Yeah.
I think that if we track all the dancers by their WSDC number, and then they can update information about themselves, and that can be used in any sort of website or application.
Yeah. I'm actually tracking the WSDC numbers so that we can pull points if we need to, and find out what level they're at and all that kind of stuff. I don't know. That's cool. Like I really like these ideas, and I feel like we can definitely start approaching some of these. And I think not all of these features we're talking about have to be implemented into DancerDeck, but they could be like what you're saying with Dan, what you've got all these other websites that you're working on. And it's like, maybe you just tie into the API and offer that feature as a, you know, if it doesn't kind of fit within the whatever DancerDeck is, whatever its goal is and wherever it's going. So, all right, we'll have to keep that conversation going then. But as far as trying to wrap this up just a little bit, because we're kind of getting close to that wrap-up time. We kind of looked through our prioritization from last time, and we talked about kind of the reminder system and invitations and all this kind of things. And we'd even talked about event feedback, like leaving feedback on the event, like public feedback. I've kind of put that one pretty low on the list because we didn't want it to turn into like a drama llama, especially if it's like about specific people. I think for our next iteration that we just need to get public is just that get event curation done, check, then focus on event notifications. And by the way, I'm just throwing this out there, Steve, you're the guy who's actually the official officiator of this next priority list. Yeah. And then strictly, I don't know whether I should tackle strictly partner connector or at least keeping track of your hotel roomies. One of those, I don't know, those three or four, they're kind of fighting for three and four. And then finally, I've thought this feature keeps coming up, and Dan just mentioned it, the pro schedule, just being able to have like an iframe you can put on your website that lists all of your events that you're listed as going to. I mean, it should be pretty straightforward and easy to get that done. And then adding gamification is really cool. I love the idea of doing milestones for the number of events and events that you've judged, events that you've, or competitions you've competed in, all that kind of stuff.
I have a wish list. That's an event rating system based on facts. You had slightly mentioned maybe comps running late. So
yes.
Just different things like, so attendees, how late social dancing went on which days, how many attendees showed up on Thursday, kind of stuff like that benefits people's decisions to going to an event. And it would also, I think, make event directors decide that they need to work on things or that Absolutely. They're really good at something.
And that's actually, that would be the number one drive to adding a detailed schedule notification thing in there. Because if you knew to the second when these events were happening, like if you have somebody in the ballroom literally saying, Advanced Jack and Jill starting now, like you know to the second when that happened. So you can go and compare the original schedule to what actually happened and know to like the second how off they were. And then that could go against their rating. It's like, this is notoriously a horribly late behind schedule comp. And I can already think of several in my head that stand out as being horribly behind schedule all the time. Go ahead, Jess.
Yeah. So one thing that actually made me remind me of that is kind of like this, the app Waze, where it's like a map, like a GPS basically. And it kind of like helps you out. It says, oh, there's a pothole. Is there a pothole here? Yes or no. So kind of like, oh, is this event on time? Yes or no, you know, that kind of thing. So maybe the users can actually say, oh yeah, this event is on time. This is going on right now, or no, it's not. And then you can figure out, okay, it's this many hours off of time, or it's going to start in 30 minutes, something like that.
Absolutely. And I feel like that data would be really important for an event director to have, you know, and like you guys are saying, it's like, it could inspire them to become better event directors ultimately. And that's that. I mean, it's just kind of going to be win-win for everybody. Okay. So let's keep at least the first three, just to kind of keep it simple. I know we have lots of ideas and that we're going to kind of knock out in the future.
What are your three that you're considering?
Well, that's what I was going to ask you guys. So event curation is definitely, I feel like we figured out. Yes. Number one, subscribing to events / notifications, a basic version of that. That should be number two. Yeah.
I think you're overlooking your, you actually have to finish participant accounts first, because without
Yes, good call. I'm kind of overlooking the fact that I was assuming that I was actually going to finish that.
Well,
and
get
proper ACL set up. But yeah, you're right.
It's not done today. It is. So it still needs to be done. So don't forget that. That's
item zero.
Yeah. okay.
User accounts and proper ACL going. Because I don't have any access control layer action stuff going on right now.
Yeah. So that sounds like the first three is you got event curation, you've got finishing participant accounts properly, and then maybe a kind of MVP for event subscriptions.
Yep, that's it.
So, but you can go four, but I usually like to get, when you're like in the middle of it, I like to say just pick three things that you want to get done, and then that makes it easy, you know.
Absolutely. Awesome. Yes, I like this. All right, so that pretty much sums up that what we're gonna tackle to get this thing out the door in public, and then hopefully we'll have maybe one more episode on this. I know this isn't like one of the popular ones that everybody's like, oh, I got to see this one, but I feel like a lot of people this is kind of like one of those fuzzy topics that's like I mean, if you've never seen this process before of like how do you just get this idea into actual production, it can be really helpful to kind of see how other people do it and be like, hey, they did that weird and I don't think I want to do that, or they did a really good idea with that, they had a cool idea with that and I want to do that for myself. So hopefully this is helping people listening to this to with their own ideas and getting them out the door and things. Steven, did you have any final thoughts on like actual like what do we do from here? Do we just start coding? Like you mentioned something about running, not running, what's the word?
Iterating.
Yeah, iterating, but like the sprinting. That's sprinting, the agile word for it or whatever.
Yeah, I try to avoid the agile word these days because I just describe it when I describe what I'm doing, but people they have too many feelings about it. But you do want to find small winnable goals, set them, and just give yourself a time frame to kind of get them done, because it puts the constraints on your design process too, you know. So you don't want to like overthink it or like make it like super complex that you'll never actually get it done. You just want to think about what's the real goal, what do we need to ship, and just ship it. You know, there's always time later on to make it better if you decide that that's what's actually needed. But you can't build sophistication when you don't even have primitive taken care of. So right now you're in the business of shipping primitive.
I will do that. I'm excited to ship primitive at the moment.
Yeah.
Primitive and ugly.
Well, it's not ugly. Stop it. It looks nice.
Yeah. Well, it's the number one concern I have is the event landing details page, because I just threw stuff all over the place. Like there's a countdown that randomly appears up in the upper right hand corner and it's all text and it's just, yeah, it's all over the place. But yeah. But it'll get there. It'll get there.
Yeah.
Joss or Dan, did you guys have any final thoughts before we wrap this thing up with the developer shout out?
One last thing that I thought maybe you could add is as far as state by state, maybe you could add a page for local dances as well, because I know a lot of people travel. So maybe if they're traveling for work or something and they want to go out social dancing, they have somewhere to reference to as far as where the local dance is held and all that good stuff.
Interesting. I like this idea. Go ahead.
That was your echo.
I thought it was because somebody turned their mic off. They're mute off. We'll get the terms right here. Words are fun. Okay, so like be able to add local events, like for example, West Coast Wednesday in Chicago. If you weren't from Chicago, you could just go on DancerDAC and be like, what events are going in Chicago that are regular events? I like that. Local events. Okay, we're going to think about that one in the future iteration for sure. Dan, do you have any final thoughts?
Well, just a note on what Jocelyn was just asking. I'm kind of working on a project that does some of that. Actually, event curation itself, pulling data from Facebook and choosing curators, and then both for bigger events and smaller events. So I don't know if we can chat about that and maybe see if we can somehow integrate the list so they help you.
Didn't we talk about that a little bit?
I've got too many projects going. So we can chat about that at some point. And no, I'm actually just kind of excited to see where this project goes and continue to see improvement on the project. And as far as the way it looks, I think it generally looks fine. Obviously, there's going to be a ton of stuff to work on once it's in a further iteration. But I think that for the beginning, I wouldn't even worry about the way it looks, just the way it functions. And then, I mean, I can even help you on how it looks, you know?
Sweet. Well, thanks, man. I appreciate that. Maybe we'll just have a skin day where we can just sit down and skin it with something.
Sounds fun.
Cut up a new design. Sweet. Well, I do want to wrap this thing up with a developer shout out, which is a segment that recognizes a developer who is awesome in the community. And we reward them for being awesome and all their contributions by providing a $50 Amazon gift card sponsored by Laracast. And I send them a thank you note and everything like that, handwritten with my ugly handwriting. But if you don't know what Laracast is, it is a fantastic resource for learning new technologies, in especially around the realm of PHP, specifically Laracast or Laravel, which is what we've been building DancerDeck on. But it has all kinds of other resources on there. There's screencasts showing you step-by-step on how to do things. Become a pro at Vim. If you've ever wanted to become a pro at Vim, that's what I've been doing recently, is trying to figure out this Vim stuff and becoming a master. So thanks, Laracast, for sponsoring the developer shout-out, being a faithful sponsor every month. And for this episode, I asked specifically Steve, to Mr. Steven, to nominate somebody for the developer shout out. And the developer shout out goes to, drum roll.
I hope that the $50 gift certificate can be converted into Australian dollars, because I want to send it to Ben Corlett, who's part of the League of Extraordinary PHP Packages. But he's been super busy lately, and we're trying to get a new version of the OAuth 1 client out the door, something that matches the OAuth 2 client. And so he's the primary maintainer on that package, and there's been a lot of good work that's been put into it, and he's here and there finding some time to get everything merged and get everything sorted. So a little bit is a bribe to get him to actually push things through a little faster, but also it's an acknowledgement of great work and dedication.
Excellent. Yes. So thanks so much, Ben, for your contributions in the OAuth 1 package, which is part of the PHP League, right?
That's correct. Yep.
Cool. So hopefully, Ben, I will be trying to find you your mailing address. I always feel a little awkward about just sending people I've never met before, like, hey, can I have your physical address? Yeah. A lot of people, like, they'll respond back and be like, you mean, like, my actual physical address? I'm like, yeah, I want to send you a thank you card. But, you know, so far it's been fine. There's been a few people I haven't been able to track down specifically. But, Ben, don't be weirded out when I ask for your physical address. I'm not there to stalk you. Maybe later when I go to Australia. But I definitely want to send this $50 Amazon gift card to you from Laracast. So thanks so much for your hard work on that. And I don't want to forget, today I just got a pull request from Chris48S to the show notes repo, which is at github.com/phproundtable. And we have a repo there called show notes. And it's basically just markdown files. And if I can't, I'm not able to actually write the show notes for these episodes, so it's open source. Yay. So Chris, I don't have your actual real name, so as soon as you give me your real name, I will give you proper credit. But Chris, 48S on GitHub. Thank you so much for the contributions for episode number 38, which was the last episode. I already got some show notes there with links and all the goodies to all the RFCs that we talked about. So thanks, Chris. And finally, we're for next episode, which is going to be Thursday. Actually, it's coming up pretty soon. Is all about graph databases. So we talked a little bit about graph databases in the ORM discussion, and even today, talking about how it was one of the bottlenecks that kind of prevented me from getting this out sooner. But we'll talk about some actual projects that are good for graph databases in the next episode. And if you have something you'd like to share about, some kind of PHP topic that nerds care about, or anything, any kind of topic that a PHP nerd would care about, I'd love for you to join us on this panel. So just hit me up on Twitter. I'm Sammy K, or you can ping PHP Roundtable or go to phproundtable.com and fill out a form to join the roundtable. I'd just like to thank Dan and Jocelyn and Steven for joining for this episode, and we'll see you guys in the next episode.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Sammy.
Thank you.
PHP Roundtable is recorded live using Google Hangouts On Air. If you'd like to get more information about the live broadcasts, visit phproundtable.com. While you're on the site, join the mailing list to get notified about the next live episode. And hey, maybe even join the conversation at the roundtable. We'd love to hear what you have to say. The theme music is provided by BenSound at bensound.com.
The PHP Roundtable logo was designed by Clint McManaman, and you can find him at McManaman.co. That's McManaman.co. Thanks for listening. I'm Sammy K. Powers, and I hope you'll join us for the next episode.